This is where we say something funny.
Are we funny?
I'm hilarious. So I don't know about you guys, but yeah.
You're wearing Minnie Mouse headphones.
I am, which is funny. So, point proven.
Boom.
Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for February 20th, 2012. This is Mike Minotti, and I'm joined by my brother, Adj Guy.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good.
And we're also once again joined by our good friend, George Kokoris.
Woo! What's going on, dudes?
Not much. Long time, no visit, I guess, I don't want to say that, because it makes it sound like it's your fault, but...
Where the fuck have you been?
Yeah, video games.
Yeah, you know. How about them? So we got our news, right?
Yes.
And you came up with the next segment.
Yeah, it's a Let's Go Topical, but we got topics. So
oh, God.
Very topical.
Holy shit. All right. So we'll do those. Then our week in gaming and the releases, and that'll be the show. So let's get rolling.
Okay. Dog. So with the impending launch of the Vita, we found out that if you get a 3G model and activate a month's worth of 3G, you get Super Stardust Delta and all its DLC for free. I know the game itself is like $10. I don't know what the DLC cost, but I would imagine it's around $5. So you pay $15 for a month of 250 megabytes of data. You get that game for free, which you should probably get anyway from the reviews. So, huzzah.
That's not bad. Although...
No, it really isn't.
It's my understanding that there's a minor snag... which is that if you already have 3G coverage on an iPad, and then you try to activate 3G coverage on your Vita with the same name, AT&T won't let you.
That's funny. No one considered that?
Seriously? I don't know if this is like a widespread thing. All I know is that a couple of people I know have been complaining about that, and they've been saying, yeah... I can't activate 3G on my Vita because AT&T is like, you already did that with your iPad, and we can't do that twice for you, so fuck off.
Well, you know, it's not like people who have 3G iPad data plans aren't, like, possible early adopters for a Vita or anything. So I don't see this being too big a deal.
Nah, probably not. I don't think so.
And sarcasm. Okay.
Cool. Good story, bro.
Thank you. So Todd Howard explained a little bit of why you can see Morrowind... inside of Skyrim.
Who's Todd Howard? Is he Bethesda?
Yeah.
That makes sense. It'd be funny if he was, like, from Valve. He's like, I got an explanation.
I figured it out, everybody. Don't worry. But basically, they were worried that when you got to really high mountains in the game, you would be able to see the silhouette of the distance like that, mm-hmm. which is why it's there. Now, the way he said it was like, we're not saying we might or may or not use it, but maybe. I don't know. Bless you. So they might do something with it still. I don't know.
It seems like a lot of work because maybe you would see it from the top of a mountain. Wouldn't they know already?
I mean, it's fairly nondescript. It's just like the basic geometry.
Yeah, I know. But still,
it's probably just a single height map that's just in there to add flavor to the horizon. That's just what I'm thinking.
But not only did they talk about that, but they had the reveal at DICE of their Game Jam. Have you seen this?
No.
Yes. You didn't watch it.
Oh, wait. Oh, isn't this just the thing where... Yeah, that's right.
So what happens at the end of every...
mud crabs.
Yes. At the end of every year, Bethesda lets their developers have a week to just fuck around and do whatever they want. But since they just shipped Skyrim, the rule this year was it had to be something in Skyrim. So they showed this sizzle reel of things they did, which may or may not see public release, where you had dragon mounts and mounted combat and... foliage to change with the season, better lighting, and a giant, giant mud crab. And
could you flip it over?
I think so.
Was that joke made?
Point for massive damage. Yeah. I think that's why I was there. It was great. And they made the sizzle reel look like an old episode of Pop Up Video, and the thing pops up. Fuck.
I'm glad that that's a joke that has endured. By the way,
right.
For some reason, I know a lot of people are sick of it. But
like,
yeah.
What else? You could turn to a vampire lord with minions. You could combine spells in different hands for new spells. They had the kill cam effects for
like
range combat.
Oh, they added werebears.
Yeah, werebears.
That's probably just the best part right there.
There was a talent tree for lycanthropy.
Wait, let's not gloss over werebear. So it's like a werewolf,
but it's
turned into
a bear
man. That sounds like a zillion times better than being a werewolf.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's Skyrim now with bears. Now with more bears.
So here's my question, though. So they show all this awesome stuff, and they're like, yeah, we probably won't release this. Don't you feel like they kind of shot themselves in the foot by showing all this?
Well, because now, like, I kind of expected. I'm sure some of that stuff will be the next expansion. Like,
I hope.
If they can get dragon mounts to work, that'll be an easy selling point for an expansion, wouldn't it?
Even if it's just kill cams for the mages, I mean, come on.
Is that what you want, the kill cams? I want werebears now. That sounds like what the funny thing about that is that it rhymes with Care Bears.
Now that's the funny thing about it, now you point that out.
Werebear stare. That's got to be a spell. That's got to be an ability. It's your passive.
Brilliant.
It's like intimidating shout. Werebear stare. That's the name of this episode, by the way.
Okay.
The werebear stare. Don't forget.
I won't. Remind me. Okay. Let's talk about Double Fine, the feel-good, story of the year.
The feel-good, story of the year.
Yes.
Oh, I'm hilarious. I told you I'm the funny one. What a hilarious observation I made. Tell me about this.
Well, they broke 2 million.
Yes, they did. Happy times.
They've announced that their game will come out to, like, iOS and Android and all kinds of crazy platforms.
How many more do I have to donate for them to port the game to my TI-83?
$1 million dollars. That would
I'm
be
waiting,
funny, though.
I'm waiting for them to release it on the FM Towns Marty.
Oh, man. I remember that thing. Well, I didn't have one, but I remember reading about it.
Dude, the Scum Games were released for the FM Towns Marty.
Yeah, a lot of people consider those the best versions.
I don't even know what that is.
It was some just, like, weird fucking obscure console that nobody bought because it sucked. True story.
I gotta look into this now.
But, yeah, so a funny thing was revealed during all this chit-chat.
Where
Tim Schafer talked about, like, one of the reasons why this makes so much sense for them is because when you don't have, like, complete control over your publishing or even your system, then you, like the point he made was to patch a game on the Xbox or PlayStation basically costs you $40,000. Doesn't that seem kind of crazy?
And it takes forever. That's how Monday Night Combat got screwed. Because when they launched, there was some very, very small exploit that their QA team hadn't caught during the cert process. People started exploiting in multiplayer matches. The game became borderline unplayable because of all the exploits. Fifth Cell patched the exploit in less than 24 hours, and it took 3.5 weeks for the patch to get through cert and finally be released.
Didn't Monday Night Combat have a weird thing, though, where they could patch without, like...
It was, like, little things, like weapon balance.
Okay, right.
Not, like, major code issues.
Ah.
Yeah, that was what it was. And also, like, their next one, Super Monday Night Combat, that's exactly the reason that they're doing their own platform for it now, so that they can do that quicker.
Yeah.
We're
going to talk about things like this more later.
Ooh.
Oh,
foreshadowing. So, this was weird, and this will tie into Let's Go Topical a bit. So, Origin announces, you know, EA's digital distribution thing. They announced this pretty swank deal, where if you pre-order Mass Effect 3, you get Battlefield 3 for free.
But surprise, it was a limited time offer.
But it wasn't. They said, through March 6th, the release of the game. But then apparently it worked too well, and just with no warning... Out of the blue.
What do they think people are going to do?
Out of the blue, just Twitter. On Twitter. Yeah, deal's over. Huh?
I guess they have that right.
I suppose.
I mean,
I don't know. Isn't that kind of false advertising?
Yeah, it is. At first, I was really upset about this.
Though. I mean, that's usually the kind of thing that goes into the fine print.
Yeah, I'm sure that was in there, but you got to feel like that was a little shitty.
I don't know. I was mad about it at first, and then I thought about it. I'm like, well, it's not like I was probably going to play Battlefield 3 for very long or at all. I mean, it kind of sucks. What do you want? If they had told me that there was limited time on it, I probably would have went and pre-ordered it.
Hell, that might have been to their benefit. Like, hey, if you haven't pre-ordered yet in like 10 hours, we're going to shut this off.
Maybe.
The flood of pre-orders.
I don't know how they're giving away a full-priced game. It's got to kind of cut into you a little bit.
I feel like it's just a kind of a bad PR move.
It's a not a great PR move. I don't know how bad it is. I'm not.
Yeah, okay.
No one is not going to buy Mass Effect 3
now.
That's
probably better. Well, some guy on Twitter. When I clicked the tweet just to investigate this a bit, and like there was that tweet. You know, Twitter will show you like follow up tweets. Like that was the only one that shows like, not only am I not buying Mass Effect now, but you've also lost all my DLC money from Battlefield 3.
Ooh, yeah. This guy is invested in Mass Effect over 2 games in 4 years, but now he's not going to play it anymore. I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I'm sure that that threat is very serious and threatening.
Yes.
Just like all of those, there's a brilliant image. I wish I could dig it up. It's just a screenshot of the group on Steam that was boycotting Modern Warfare 2.
Oh yeah, I know exactly
what
you're talking about.
Dedicated server support, and it was just a screenshot of the Steam group the day the game launched, and like 2/3 of them were playing Modern Warfare 2.
Sorry, I'm taking a picture of Mike wearing Minnie Mouse headphones.
I'm wondering why you're taking my picture. I forgot I'm wearing these.
Preserved for posterity.
Oh, it's going on the Twitter feed for the Exploding Barrel right now. anyway, so a major announcement from the Resident Evil 6 camp.
Woo.
They have announced their new evolved control system.
Which I want to see if this pleases you.
It does. Okay. I'm very excited.
It's a compromise what it is, right?
I just think it's funny as fuck when you listen to how they put this.
It allows you to control system? What is it, a third-person shooter now?
It allows you to, quote, shoot whilst moving, slide, roll in any direction, and to take cover, along with the addition of an enhanced melee attack.
So it
sounds like a modern-day third-person shooter to me.
I think that you still move kind of slower, at least. Well, screw you.
Like, all right.
AJ's happy it's just a third-person shooter now.
I am.
Go ahead, George.
It's like Gears of War, but it's not because we said whilst.
That shows we're
differentiator.
Smart.
That's our differentiator right there. Put that shit in the PowerPoint. We are good to go.
It is funny how the cycle is complete now. Gears of War, inspired by Resident Evil 4, and now we're just now it's just going to turn to Gears of War.
And Killswitch, the redheaded stepchild over there, inspiring so many fucking games and being utterly forgotten.
Yep, poor Killswitch.
I want to go play it now out of pity.
Pity play. That's a healthy gaming relationship.
Could I just make a quick endorsement for Tweetbot on the iPhone?
No.
Because that's this awesome feature.
I just said no.
Why'd you ask me if
you were going to do it no matter what I said?
Because just like when you go to attach a picture, there's just a button that says use last photo taken. That's awesome.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so we got some details on Sonic the Hedgehog 4 Episode 2 thanks to an Xbox Live listing and some screenshots. One thing I'm actually really excited about, just as this is kind of supposed to be like the Sonic 2-esque one, you have like Sonic with Tails in tow. It allows for co-op play online and off. So you could actually, through Xbox Live, have someone playing as Tails. Which makes me wonder if he'd get like his own complete screen view or if it's still like a single camera. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's neat.
Because we played a lot of that as kids.
We did. I liked it because I could play as Tails and there wasn't very much pressure on me.
Exactly. If you died, it didn't matter.
Right.
Especially in 2. 3, at least, you needed him to fly places.
Yeah, no. 2, I just jumped around.
But, yeah. Also, just from judging from the screenshots, it looks a lot to me like they're actually using 3D models for the characters and not, like SGI-style sprites that have weird lighting on them.
Good.
Yeah, because remember how Sonic looked weird in Episode 1?
Yeah, he looked terrible.
Okay.
I said good like that because for some reason I forgot what game we were talking about already.
Because you're looking at your picture of yourself.
I looked at this picture you put on Twitter, and I got very...
Well,
right, yes.
It's weird for me. It's like looking at a picture of the picture.
How quickly the Sonic fan gets bored. Man, Sega is really in a bad place right now.
Yeah, right?
But no, Episode 1 did not look good. There's all those like fan concepts of what a HD Sonic could look like, and they all look so gorgeous. Then you had, like, Episode 1. Eh, the generations look good. So.
Yeah. More of that, please. Speaking of 2D throwbacks, Rayman Origins was profitable for Ubisoft.
Yay!
Good God, yes!
So does this mean we're getting Beyond Good and Evil 2 now?
Maybe.
I remember when Ubisoft fucking held that over everybody's head.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
We're only going to make Beyond Good and Evil 2 if Rayman Origins makes money. Be like, you fucking dicks.
Well, it did, so...
To me, that was basically them trying to say we're not going to make Beyond Good and Evil 2, because she thought Rayman Origins was going to make
like
money. So that Vita version of it coming out too.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting actually, and I'm sure we'll have time to get into this in more detail later. But I think it's kind of funny that games like Rayman Origins and the new Double Fine thing get so much support and so much buy-in from people when all the market research says otherwise.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's pretty fucking awesome, actually.
Well, it's like, you know, that episode of The Simpsons where Homer finds out his brother like is an automobile manufacturer. And, like, he's like, Homer, what kind of car do you want? He's like, well, give me something with a lot of power. Well, the American people don't want cars with power. Okay, well, give me something that's, you know, really fast. And the American people don't want fast cars. And the guy's like, you're not giving the American people what they want. You're telling them what they want.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the case, to an extent.
Yeah, but didn't Homer at the end of the episode make a car everybody hated?
I wanted that car.
You wanted the Homer?
Yes, I did. So, Notch has come out to just let everyone know that the whole funding Psychonauts 2 by himself was a semi-joke. He has spoken with Tim Schafer, and there are a few other people who are also interested in funding it, but they're going to be a little busy for the next few months. Don't, like, expect Psychonauts 2 to be announced at E3 or anything.
Nah,
yeah,
that's
kind of what I always
figured.
That's
probably going to take a while. But, on the other hand, I think with people like Notch and presumably guys similar to him expressing interest in funding this kind of thing, and with the fucking bank that they raked in on Kickstarter, I'm sure that the general consensus is, hey, we could probably release Psychonauts 2 and make money on it. So I'm sure it'll happen in the next couple of years. It's not anytime soon.
Right. Like, if Notch helped, in another year they did another Kickstarter for this and said, hey, let's do it.
I don't know if Kickstarter would do it. I mean, that game would take a bunch of millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, I'm saying get some help. If you get $2 million again, you know, it's not going
to
hurt.
Get it going, yeah.
Right. If you have that, you have Notch and these other investors. And at that point, like, if you keep going on this and keep talking about it, and it kind of gets the idea that, hey, there is interest for this game, you think maybe a publisher will start saying, hey, yeah, we'll throw some money in on this.
It's possible.
Next.
So PAX East is committed to Boston for the next 10 years.
That's nice. Next.
Nothing else?
What do you want to say about it? You wish it was not? Do you wish they went to a different eastern city sometimes? Boston seems to be working for them. Except for the fact that they can't book it on a time that's not Easter.
Yeah, just don't do that again, bastards. And finally, Remedy has announced that the PC version of Alan Wake that went on sale recouped all of its costs, marketing and everything, in 48 hours. It's pretty good.
George, you said on this show once that it was your favorite game ever.
Alan Wake. I did say that at one point.
I don't think you feel that way anymore, but the point is that you were very excited about Alan Wake.
No, and it made quite an impression on me. You know, I mean, like, it's, you know, I've got enough distance from it to see the places where it's, like, really broken. But, no, I mean, I'm actually really, really glad that they made their money back that quickly. Actually, Dear Esther did the same thing in about 6 hours. So, props to both of those games.
I don't know this off the top of my head. Did Dear Esther have a publisher, per se?
No. The Chinese group did it directly through Valve.
It should be noted, too, that Remedy self-published this on Steam.
Yes, they did. That was
Keep
not,
that in
it
mind
did not
for
happen
later.
Through Microsoft.
Okay, so, let's go topical.
Okay.
2.0.
Woo!
First up, we're going to talk a little bit about Origin. So, Peter Moore came out and made the promise that Origin will be excellent within 2 years. He then goes on to kind of, like, say, like, oh, yeah, people complain a lot, but the complaints have died down, and, hey, Steam was a big fucking mess when that launched in 2004. So, you know, we're par for the course. In 2 years, it's going to be rocking. Here's my issue with that. First of all, that was 2004. They were the first ones doing it. So, yeah, there were problems. And then say, like, oh, in 2 years, Origin's going to be sweet. Well, what do you think Steam's going to look like in 2 years? I mean, think back even just to Steam 2 years ago. So do you think them saying Origin will be fine in 2 years is good enough?
I don't think Origin's going to be. I don't think it will be as big or as prominent as it is right now in 2 years. I don't think they'll be able to afford to make it their exclusive kind of thing.
You think it's going to get smaller?
Yeah. This isn't really the first kind of thing like this that we've seen to try to compete with Steam. And it seems like the outcome of these things is that they sort of stopped doing it. Kind of like with Windows Live. Was that Live for Windows?
Games whatever? For Windows Live.
Games for Windows Live, whatever that stupid thing was called.
Ugh.
Right, that was the same kind of thing.
Dude,
everyone hated it.
I work for Microsoft, but blech.
Exactly, and, you know, where's that right now? That's not even a thing anymore, right?
No, it's not.
Don't they just call it Xbox Live now?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, right now, like, the games that... I'm trying to think now. No, I mean, because I think, like, most of the games that come out under the, like, you know, Games for Windows brand, it's just Games for Windows, which means that, like, it passed, like, a Microsoft cert process, basically. But it doesn't incorporate the Games for Windows Live infrastructure, which is, like, really, really busted.
Right. Basically, and the only reason people would use Origin at all, or at least in my case, and a lot of people I know, is because they make you for something. Like, I just downloaded Origin finally because, oh, I want to get Mass Effect 3, so I guess I'll have to get Origin.
And the
then I won't use it again, probably.
On Origin, when we were trying to play the Mass Effect 3 demo together, which we'll talk about later, but it was a fucking primitive step backwards.
I mean, it wasn't terrible
It wasn't terrible, but like...
It had more functionality than PSN.
But the whole... That's kind of true. But the whole time, I'm just thinking to myself how much easier this would be on Steam. Like, there was no cross, like out-of-system voice chat. You can only voice chat once we were in the lobby together. Like, just, like, all of that just, like, it was driving me nuts. And I'm like, why isn't this as good as what's already out there? If they really want to compete with Steam.
Did the call drop?
No.
Nope.
George? Okay.
He's right
I'm sorry.
He's just listening.
I heard the noise.
No, I'm sorry. Like... I'm getting iMessages that you'll hear that noise in the background, but it's not affecting anything else.
I'm sorry. What were you saying? Oh, yeah. Fuck Origin.
that's the moral.
And
all right.
Scene.
And next.
So, in a similar vein to that now, where was I going with this? I had a sweet transition ready to go. Oh, yeah. So...
Nice transition so
Thank
far,
you.
By the way.
But one of the blatant reasons EA has Origin, though they won't admit it, is because they want to have complete control over their games and kind of their platform and everything.
They want a direct channel to the consumer.
Exactly. And we say, like, you know, Origin's a bad idea, but then, like we just said a bit ago, you had Remedy self-publish a title, cut out the middleman, so to speak, make all this money. You have the same thing with Dear Esther. You have Double Fine, you know, going around the publishers, going directly to fans to get funding for a game, and that seems to have worked out pretty well for them. And just the fact that it's so easy to get your content out there without having to go through an EA or something like that if you don't want to makes me wonder, is the traditional publisher model in trouble as we move into more and more digital distribution?
I don't necessarily think that the model is in trouble because it's so monolithic. It's not going to be going away anytime soon. But, I mean, where I see this going is the sort of at the top level, at the biggest sort of AAA commercial game development level, the publisher model is still going to be there for the foreseeable future, and it's really not going to be affected by this. Really, the biggest thing that's going to happen is we're going to end up seeing a lot more games at the lower end of the scale. I mean, like, financially, meaning.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to end up seeing a lot more games coming out, actually making it to relatively high-profile platforms that would not have been picked up by a publisher. You know, a publisher would not have jumped on the new Double Fine game, but...
Right.
That game is, like, as far as I'm concerned, with the rate at which they're pulling in money on Kickstarter, that game is almost guaranteed to be profitable.
I think it's already a success. I mean, they could draw the budget now so that there's a profit built into the budget.
Right. No, they can absolutely do that. And, you know, and I think if they're smart, they're probably doing that already. You know, with like a little extra, whether that ends up being a safety net or their actual profit, you know, that depends on production. But, you know, like there's that, you have Rayman Origins making a profit, you have this, like, this huge swath of now smaller indie games, from Hawken to Cradle to, you know, like these very, very polished, kind of like what industry people like to call single A titles. these like really, really polished indie games that, you know, I mean, you can tell that they're trying to hit like a core AAA market, but you know, they're smaller. They're usually being done by like a dozen guys, and a publisher would never pick it up, but these guys just sell it straight to their customers and people eat it up because the games are fucking good. So I don't think the publisher model is necessarily going away, but there's going to be a whole lot more surrounding it now.
I remember just even a couple years ago, people were complaining a lot that, you know, all we have anymore are these big AAA games mostly. And indie games, I feel like even compared to 2 years ago, indie games means a very different thing than it used to mean.
Yes.
Where before you kind of lowered your expectations for an indie game,
mm-hmm.
whereas now they have all these resources to fund or publish them themselves so that there is a kind of a higher quality than we used to expect from them.
Right, absolutely. I mean, like you look at the top end, you look at games like Overgrowth and Natural Selection 2. Those games are because mm-hmm. I mean, like, okay, Hawken is being done in the Unreal Engine. And you know, and it's fantastic, and their artists are like completely out of this world. But you know, even like Overgrowth and Natural Selection 2, those are home-rolled engines. These guys wrote their entire code bases from the ground up, and technologically they're competing with Unreal and CryEngine. They're on that technological level, and it's just that the project is at a smaller scale and it's taking a little bit more time to make, and there's no publisher overhead. So it ends up actually working as a business model, and that's fucking wild.
Yeah, basically, I don't know if this is going to change the industry. Like George says, I think that AAA games will be AAA games.
Yeah,
that are gonna require
I agree.
But
I
this
think
is
that mid-tier.
Right.
Like, the 10 to 15 downloadable games,
whatever,
you're not going to need a publisher there.
Whatever is happening, though, it's good.
Yes.
Basically,
so let's keep it up.
Yeah, basically, the game industry has a middle class now.
Yeah.
The only problem with it right now is, I know at least on Xbox Live Arcade, and I don't know if this is the case on PSN, you have to have a publisher to be published next.
Well, I think we're finding out now that Xbox Live Arcade is no longer the best avenue for these kind of games.
Right.
Well, I mean, maybe it was for a while there when we had like that golden era with Braid and stuff like that. Now it's like, no, publish yourself maybe on Steam or something. Like, look at like Super Meat Boy is kind of the big example of that.
Yeah,
with all
they
their frustration of
PC.
That platform. Yeah, and then they just went to Steam or PC or whatever and kind of steamrolled over it.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, like, I really can't talk too much about work, really, but
Mr. Big Shot.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'll get sacked, but I think the attitude at Microsoft, especially now and especially among the parts of the company where I work, I think the attitude is slowly, I mean very, very slowly, but I feel like it's becoming more and more amenable to the idea of self-publishing. We just pushed a dashboard update that puts the Indie Games channel up front, which is really nice. So it's not buried underneath a whole shit ton of menus. And, you know, and, like, that, I think, is, you know, I can't speak about any kind of policy at the top level, but I do feel like...
You see a shift.
Yeah, and it's happening, and again, it's happening very slowly, and I only ever see it from, you know, the people that I speak to. But I think that there are enough people who are aware of the fact that that's kind of problematic. And, you know, I don't know. Again, like, I would very much like to see that, like, completely change overnight, but, you know, I'm just some fucking designer.
These things are always
whatever.
All right, what's next, Asgard?
So, do you guys see this thing where somebody supposedly put up Pokemon Yellow on the iTunes App Store?
I heard about this.
Now, we don't know if it was because it was a 99-cent app that was clearly not published by Nintendo. And from what I can tell, as soon as you tried to play it, it just crashed immediately. And yes. This got through iTunes approval process.
I didn't
know
that.
Now, I don't know on what level it did. The blatant copyright violation, the fact that the app literally didn't work.
Yeah, it's not like this
was
an obscure game. It's Pokemon.
Yeah, and these guys also published their own Digimon and something else. But even from the IP infringement, all it did was a splash screen and it crashed. And it was 99 cents. So this makes me wonder, how did this happen? And it took 24 hours for it to come down. It was the number 2 paid game on the App Store for a day.
That's funny.
It's
how
do you think this happens? And how do you stop it?
Well, they just got to try harder. I don't know what their process is. Clearly, it's not very effective. Or I feel like right now their process is an absence of one. I mean, somebody who knew either there is a good process and the person just knew nothing about Pokemon, or also wasn't concerned the game didn't work. I don't know. There's no good reason. I have no idea what happened. They just suck. They blew it.
Yeah, they really did.
Next.
Okay. See, these are all flowing so nicely.
Right.
So,
what are you complaining about when I do it?
No, I'm just happy.
Yeah. That's right.
So,
AJ, I'm giving you the werebear stare right now.
-5 to
dexterity.
Charisma. I don't know.
Charisma.
This is the first one that came to mind. It doesn't charisma. Mean anything. So,
charisma.
In the vein of copycat games coming to iOS, Gameloft is kind of like a known offender where they basically take console games and make crappy iPhone versions of them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a thing I find as not a good sign for the Vita, but it's more Ubisoft's fault than Sony's. So what is it? Dungeon Defender? No. I didn't write down the name of the game.
Ruin?
No, it's some generic dungeon crawl thing.
It's
an iPhone game.
Isn't that the... Oh, you're talking about an iPhone game.
Yeah, it's $6. Very often it goes on sale for 99 cents. There's a PC Mac version, it's $14. There's a PS3 version, it's $12. There's a Vita version, it's a retail game, and it's $40. Same game.
Really?
How does that happen? How does that happen?
Marketing.
Bad decisions.
Fucking marketing.
Now, do you think it kind of falls to Sony to be like, listen, we don't want you guys to fuck this up for us. Don't do that.
I mean, I don't know how much power they actually have. Maybe they should. I like to think this isn't going to be this doesn't set the trend for everything that's going to happen on the Vita, hopefully. It is interesting just how unwilling the big three are to make 99-cent games.
Yeah, I mean, clearly that's where the marketplace is going.
You kind of have some things on the 3DS, but they're not very relevant or prevalent, I guess I should say.
Well, Nintendo does a shitty job of marketing its stuff because they don't just seem interested in it.
That's true. It's sometimes there is stuff on the 3DS, but you'll never know.
Right.
You'll never know. Next.
So, at DICE, my good buddy, David Jaffe.
You love David Jaffe.
Has basically declared that story-driven games are a waste of time and money. Here's his quote.
Lol.
I knew this was going to piss George off. I'm so excited. He said the following. My talk is actually a warning about why we shouldn't tell stories with our video games. I think it's a bad idea. I think it's a waste of resources and time and money. And more importantly, I think it actually stunts and has stunted over the last 10 years or so the medium of video games.
Didn't he make God of War?
And Twisted Metal with cutscenes.
Well, Twisted Metal.
They're making
whatever.
A movie of Twisted Metal.
Yeah. So maybe he's just a very, very old school purist, and he wants to go back to those high scores. So I don't know. It's kind of one of those things where maybe if I heard the talk, his context, I could see where he's coming from and still disagree with him. But right now, he just sounds crazy, bananas.
Let's ask George, the guy who found all the terminals in Halo, what he thinks about this.
Well, here's the thing. I think that he's making a sweeping statement about all video games, and those are almost never correct.
Right.
I remember at GDC last year, David Cage gave a talk in which he said that game mechanics were evil. And he literally used the word evil because he thought that they distracted too much from the story. And it's like, y'all are both full of shit. Like, seriously.
Well, it's the two extreme ends of the spectrum
here. That's the thing. I guess the bigger thing is that you know, narrative through, I mean, like, narrative through gameplay, right? Or the prevalence of game mechanics as the driving force of a game design. And narrative, right? It's not like a slider where you have, like, one or the other, or you can have, like, a shitty version of both. It's like they're two completely independent things. Like, you can have one or the other, or you can have both, or you can have, like, none, in which case you're a rock.
You're not making,
I mean,
a video,
like,
game,
whatever.
Or you're making a music game, maybe? I don't know,
but then there's still mechanics, though. You know, I think just the idea of making this, like, huge sweeping statement about something like that is ridiculous. I mean, I think the really, really huge linear thrill ride roller coaster kind of thing is, yeah, okay, it's problematic, and I mean, like, honestly, I don't really get into them nearly as much as I used to. But, you know, I mean, to say that there's, like, an entire type of game that has been rendered totally irrelevant and it's holding back the rest of the medium, that's just lazy thinking, man.
Well, you just have to realize, I mean, the word video game is so broad.
Right.
Because video game could define Pong, it could define Half-Life 2, it could define Dragon's Lair, it could define Solitaire. Like, you can't say, like you said, you can't make these general statements.
Yeah.
It's different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, pretty much.
I feel like I'm sick of these people who want to, quote, save the industry.
The industry's fine.
And I always hate that. Maybe there are some problems in the industry, but...
It's not
a debate of, like, storytelling.
When David
versus...
Jaffe makes an amazing video game that wins a Game of the Year award that has literally no story in it. I mean, if there's even a hint of story, I'm going to just scream.
Then he
can say this and say I was right. I mean, even fucking Calling All Cars has a story.
He's bananas.
Mm-hmm.
I think all rational people think this.
Yeah, he's...
I can't wait until he goes back in his hole. He's like the fucking groundhog. He pops up every time there's new Twisted Metal coming out and says stupid stuff.
Yeah.
He sees his shadow and goes away. And six more years
yeah,
of me
and
not
then,
talking.
Yeah, and he tries to tell you that your girlfriend will blow you if you let her beat you at Twisted Metal. Like, mm-hmm.
Last week. You missed it.
oh, did I? Well, he's a douche.
Yes. See, George agrees with me.
I was just saying he's not a douche. I'm just saying Twisted Metal is cool.
All right.
I just like his game still a little bit.
I still think that the I don't remember who it was, but a friend of mine had said that Twisted Metal is exactly the kind of thing that a bunch of, like, unhappy divorced dads would come up with to try to convince their teenage sons that they're cool. I can't take credit for that, and whoever thought that up, if you're listening, thank you, but that was fucking brilliant.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Is that it?
I have one more.
Oh, right, the thing with the...
Okay, so I was in the woods all weekend with no cell phone signal, so I kind of missed all this and had to catch up to it.
I thought it just happened today.
Yeah, I think it was this morning, really. Yeah. But so the Penny Arcade Report launched at some point this weekend.
It's basically... like the Ben Kuchera show.
For now, yeah, it's going to expand. But the idea of it, kind of their mantra, is they're sick of the whole 24-hour news cycle of video games where, you know, someone making a cake that looks like the cake from Portal is a headline and all this, these bullshit things. Their goal is to just create, you know, in-depth journalistic pieces about the video game industry. And one of their first big stories is this really big, interesting interview with Gabe Newell. At the top of this, they have a staff photographer who got this picture of Gabe for it, and Gabe has a beard now. So what does Kotaku do?
Plunkett, specifically.
Yes. Runs an article that is like basically like, OMG, he has a beard. He puts the picture up, and what apparently happened is the way Kotaku's CMS works... when you upload a picture, it's automatically inserted to fit into the frame a certain way, and as a result of that, the watermark for Penny Arcade Report got cropped off. So then what happens is Ben Kuchera, without contacting Kotaku or anything to say anything, just on Twitter, is like, well, that didn't take long. We published our first story, and Kotaku already makes a beard article out of it. Way to go. Now, I'm not saying who's right or wrong in this, because obviously Kotaku does their thing. That's like, they've been doing this forever.
Yeah, wait, what are you going to do?
Kotaku did make a news article about a fucking beard.
Right, and that's fucking, like a whole other discussion about kind of the state of gaming journalism. What I find also, like, to be equally fascinating in this is how it wasn't a conversation behind closed doors or sent via email, like, hey, could you put the watermark back on? Like, don't do that, please. Instead, it was done very publicly on Twitter. It blew up on Reddit. It turned into this huge fucking thing.
Another kind of immature way to handle it. And plus, I hate when these things show up on Reddit, because then I'm always worried about the next Reddit witch hunt. Did you see, I think it was last week, where somebody posted a fake, like, quote from, like, the main female writer from a lot of BioWare games. It was like half the quote was true and half it wasn't. Like, the true part was, it was like about how she says she doesn't play games and that she thinks you should be able to fast forward like the combat. And then there's like some other thing that just wasn't true. But regardless, it like was on the top of Reddit, and there was like a giant witch on people getting her phone number and stuff. Like, they had to take it off Reddit and be like, guys, stop this. And like shit like that's just like is annoying me and slash worrying me now.
Reddit,
so, like,
please, dude, Reddit is the shithole of the fucking internet. I've been saying
that's ain't cool news.
Months.
Ain't cool news is a peg down.
I don't know. I just like it ain't like ain't a cool news and Reddit and Dig and 4chan. They're all just like this one big sort of like amorphous cloud of male privilege and bullshit.
Yeah, but I have to exploit Reddit for hits. So,
but again, like I've noticed this happening a lot recently. There was another situation where Lick Chan, a listener and friend of ours, we met him at the PAX in 09, who lives in New York, he's a very prolific poster on NeoGAF. And he wanted to create a thread about some article on Kotaku and pasted the whole article and linked back to Kotaku as well. And, like, Kotaku editors were publicly calling him out on Twitter, like, what the fuck, man? And he's like, oh, hi, okay, sorry. And they're like, it's just disrespectful. And he's like, well, I want to make sure everyone actually read the article or else the discussion wouldn't have happened. So, like, again, there's kind of right and wrong on both sides.
It's kind of not cool on his part. You don't want to do the whole article.
Right, but then,
although,
like,
Kotaku's done that to Bitmob, like, they just have.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a little bit hypocritical.
That's, like, half their business is publishing other people's articles and press releases. But, so, again, there's, like, the half of it where it's, like, are you a, like, even Luke Plunkett said in his rebuttal to this whole PRA thing, he's like, I don't consider myself a journalist. I just entertain
everyone is sick of that shit, by the way. How, like, half of Kotaku stuff, like, I'm not a journalist. And the other half is like, well, we didn't talk about this because of journalistic integrity.
Right. So there's that. And then it's like, Lick,
I mean,
said,
that's Luke Plunkett's thing.
Lick
though.
Said to him, like, next time stupid. You could just send me a PM. We don't have to do this on Twitter. Like, I just think it's weird that, like, there's all this journalism shit-throwing going on, like, in a public
forum. It's
kind of
stupid.
Dude, there's just shit-throwing all over the fucking internet. Like, I'm just, I mean, I even
but these are the supposed professionals. It's one thing when, like, Reddit users or NeoGAF users start pissing at each other. But when the supposed leaders of our industry, and you know, from the journalism side, are, like, engaging in the same thing with each other, I feel like that's weird.
No, I think it doesn't help that.
It is really weird and unnerving. And, like, I mean, honestly, I think it's a sign of, like, way, way bigger problems that reach, like, far beyond just video games. But, yeah, it was
don't
funny.
Get all pic- just, oh, like, don't get all big picture on us now.
Yeah. No, it's, here's the thing about humanity. No, I mean, like, I even had this moment, like, a couple of hours ago where, like, I'm looking at all the articles and the fucking responses and shit to the whole, like, Jennifer Hepler mess, and mm-hmm. like, and I'm literally just thinking to myself, why the fuck do I still use the internet? Like, seriously. What the shit? Why am I even on Twitter anymore?
What was the other one happened this week, too? It was, they're re-releasing Karataka, and there was, like, it's hard to tell the tone on Twitter, granted, but it sounded like people were legitimately upset that they, when they alpha phonetically spelled out however you pronounce it, they were wrong. And they were, like, saying, like, way to do your fucking research. Like, well, that's what they told us. Well, you're wrong. And, like, they were, like, again, there was, like, this pissing match on Twitter between journalists. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Dude, fucking video games. That's my... That's just my response to everything now. Just fucking video games. Seriously.
Well, let's talk about some fucking video games. What'd you play, Mike?
Yes.
Oh, I get to start?
Yeah, you can start.
Oh, that's so unusual. I beat Minish Cap.
You did. How was it?
It was great, actually. I really enjoyed it. I feel like it's very underappreciated. I feel like if Minish Cap was a 1994 Super Nintendo game instead of a 2000 whenever Game Boy Advance game, it would have been a lot more beloved.
And revered.
Revered, in a sort of way. I mean, I love the sort of unconventional items you get in it. The best was, like, the last item you get is Rock's Cape, which is kind of a play on Rock's Feather.
Uh-huh.
Like, you can jump, but in the jump, too, you can kind of sprout a cape and fly a little
bit. Yeah, that was in Four Sword Adventures, too.
Was it? Yeah, because mm-hmm. those games are very similar. But, yeah, Rock's Cape was awesome. The final bosses with Vaddy were all really cool. It was just very well designed. It was just very much in that Link to the Past style, except kind of like what Skyward Sword did recently. There was very much an effort to just not do the same thing again. And it's not like with Twilight Princess where they tried to come up with new items and a lot of them were very gimmicky. There's no dreidel of death among the items.
Right.
You know, it's just, there wasn't even a hookshot in Minish Cap. There's no hookshot. And you just not like, all right, fine, no hookshot. I'll get over it. It didn't, like, necessarily worry too much about the checklist, I would like to say. Like, well, we're making a Zelda game, you gotta put this in, you gotta put this in.
Boomerang,
you
know, hookshot.
There's no Ganondorf, for one thing.
That's pretty big. That
at the time, that, a lot of them. Yeah. Like, which other ones didn't have Ganondorf in them? Link's Awakening?
Majora's Mask and...
Yeah, so... I love Vaddy, too. I wish he would be in more games. He's a cool villain.
Cool.
But, it was great. Especially for free.
Yeah. What else?
I've been playing Assassin's Creed Revelations more, trying to finally get through that. It's picked up a bit. My thing I hated about it at first was that it very awkwardly was trying to set itself up with... And maybe it was because it wasn't in the way I expected. Mostly, you know that trailer that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
And I always kind of imagined that that was the end of the game, and instead it was the beginning, which was always weird to me. But now I'm just in this point where, you know, it's turned into Assassin's Creed, and you're in that open world city, very much like in Brotherhood.
You're not, like, going through first-person narrative.
No, those things are those stupid things. I mean, they're optional, at least, and there aren't that many of them. But, like basically, it's just Brotherhood now in a different city with a slightly older Ezio.
Well, that's good.
So, and I like Assassin's Creed, so that's been fun. I played the Metal Gear Solid 3 3D.
Yeah, I haven't downloaded. I haven't played it yet. What do you think? I didn't know it comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, it's cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
It even without the Circle Pro, it feels pretty good on the 3DS. Surprisingly.
Well, that's good.
You kind of like with Peace Walker. Actually, you use like the face buttons to aim, and it works better than you think it would.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I don't think it would work
right,
well at
all.
You
use a lot of the actions on the D-pad. Yeah, you think that wouldn't work, but I'm getting the headshots on the people with the train gun from silly distances, just like I normally would.
That's good. It looks good and everything.
Yeah, it looks good. The only thing that seems to have taken a hit from the original is the frame rate is down a bit.
Oh.
Yeah, I think you can
get
over.
Let me ask you this. Would you rather, because it's kind of conjecture.
Play it without 3D with the frame rate?
No, not even that. Play it on a 3DS in 3D or wait for them to do the HD collection on the Vita.
Rather play in 3D.
Really?
One thing I really like is how they use that bottom screen. Like, just, you know, it's just a silly, it's the thing we've had since the DS, but I really like having the quick buttons for the camo and the food and the healing down there.
Oh, that's down there?
Yeah, which is great. And what's even better is when you do the CQC and you hold the guy, there will just be three buttons down there. Like, and there's like the ones like interrogate and the ones like knock him out.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
Right, because I can never remember.
What the fuck a button does.
Right,
so
right,
they
exactly.
Just say what they do. That's right. Awesome. Okay, I'm real excited now.
It's just the convenience of that second screen one. And, you know, the 3D, it's cool. It's 3D. It's kind of like some of the earlier 3DS games where on the max setting, it's probably a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually put that slider in the middle. But also just playing it, that's such a good game.
Yeah.
Freaking Metal Gear Solid 3, man. I love it.
Very good.
So I'm pretty excited about this now.
All right. Is this where we transition to the Mass Effect 3 demo?
Yeah, that's right. We did play that.
We played the multiplayer. You only played a round. I played some more rounds after you went to bed that night.
Right. We'll play some more in next coming days. It was fun. It was fine.
Your GameStuff comic is very right. It's Horde mode. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with
it. It's a pretty good... I have to admit, I actually haven't played very much Horde mode of anything. I haven't played Firefight, Horde mode, none of that, really.
See, I have some experience.
So you'll have to answer me this. Do Horde modes often do that thing where they throw in some objectives like that? Is that kind of a unique thing?
I don't want to say it's entirely unique to this game, because I feel like someone has done something like that at some point. I might be wrong.
Let's explain it, I guess, real quick.
Yeah, but it is a twist on it, but go ahead.
So, I mean, you have your Mass Effect bank of classes, Vanguard, Soldier, and all those. Each class already has one race/gender unlocked. This kind of pisses me off. I'll get into it. But you pick your class, you make your character, and it becomes like an RPG character. You level them up. You know, just like you would in Mass Effect. You basically are playing Horde mode with waves of enemies, but every so often, you'll get an objective like, you know, just go capture a point till the meter fills.
Yep, very simple objectives. Like
you'll get, like VIP targets you have to take down. Go turn off these four switches that are spread across the map. It's enough to, like, at least keep it interesting and keep you moving around the map so you're not just in the same spot the whole time. And the thing is, I really like the gunplay in Mass Effect, so this is great for me.
So the fun thing is that you do have all those kind of abilities, and that's an interesting choice. And you have the whole leveling up thing, which is always entertaining to do in these things. It's not very, like, you play it with another person, it's not entirely super cooperative, any more so than any other kind of horde mode.
I played around where we got to the final round. And this team was not cooperating, and as a result, at the end, we got our asses kicked.
No, final round.
The final round is hard.
But it's not like, it's not life-affirming, as maybe some of the hype was trying to make it out to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, it's a multiplayer
mode. I think it's pretty
good. I like it. It's fine. It's just, I don't know if it's something that anyone's going to play a month after the game.
Well, here's one thing.
I think it's going to be, I mean, let's not forget, BioShock 2 multiplayer was not bad, per se.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, what? Who cares? Whatever.
I think the fact that it's more cooperative in nature than competitive.
Yeah,
helps.
We'll see. And we'll see how it ties into the single player. That's still kind of a question mark to me.
And the one thing they do in it that's weird is you basically buy, like, randomized decks of boost that you can use on a per-round basis. So you spend in-game currency to buy these things, and, you know, they're random, so you might get weapon mods, new weapons, and things like a med pack that you could use once in a round, stuff like that. But this is also the way you unlock new races. And here's the thing. The races are not aesthetic. They are different from each other, even in the same class. You know, Krogans have more health, and the Vanguard, who's a Krell, has different abilities than a human female Vanguard.
Right.
But from what I can tell, getting a new race starts you back to level one. So you feel like you're just kind of wasting time till you, by random chance, unlock the race you want.
It is,
like,
kind of a waste.
Why does that have to be gated? Why can't I just be a Drell off the bat?
Well,
I don't like that, but oh well.
The other thing that I think you might have just kind of mentioned in passing. So the different races have different attributes, but you still have to unlock the different races. But did you also say that you have to unlock the it has a default gender and you have to unlock the other one?
Well, every class is available as a human male, human female, and then two other races, mixed between, you know, Krogan, Drell,
Turian,
Turian, Asari. Volusk, or no? What's Tali's race? I'm screwing up the name.
I forget
those guys. So that's kind of the conceit of it. So kind of.
It's like some classes you'll have them
say, like that. That could have been. That could have.
It's
been
not
really
sexist,
weird, but okay,
yeah, it's equally. Yeah, I
kind of see. What
it's equally
doing.
Limiting. Because on some, the default will be just the girl, so if you want
to... Yeah, like my Vanguard's a female right now, because that's all there was.
Yeah.
That's fine. I don't care. So you didn't play because you're saving it, and that's fine. But I decided to play the single player.
Yeah, I don't want to play the single
player. And what I did was I played it the exact opposite of the way that my Shepard character that'll be important in the game would play. So instead of doing a female Paragon, I did a male Renegade. This is already going to be the best game ever.
Okay.
I'm just saying it now.
We'll see.
The opening sequence in this game, which is roughly the equivalent of in Mass Effect 2 where you're escaping from the Cerberus area.
That was cool.
Leaps and bounds above anything you've ever seen in a video game.
Okay.
I'm trying not to be too hyperbolic.
You're
doing a bad job.
But you are.
I know.
You just,
Okay, let me try to reel it in a bit here.
It's the best thing ever.
The cinematic presentation that happens in this game is phenomenal. When you see especially after playing Reckoning, when you have like the dialogues that happen in that game where you're making your choices and you have the talking heads, and then you do dialogue in this game where there's so much shit going on and it's all hand animated and everything's happening like a choreographed film.
Hand animated. Oh, right. I got you.
Yeah.
Keyframe.
It just blows your mind the level of production that goes into this game. And without spoiling the opening, this was, in this little 5-minute chunk of gameplay, one of the most emotionally, what's the word I want?
Captivating?
Yeah. Emotionally captivating things I've ever seen in a video game happened, which impressed the hell out of me. The second mission in the demo, it's a little more combat focused, not quite as story heavy, but even that had some amazing character moments that just like literally brought a smile to my face to see them happening. And I don't want to tell you what it is, but I will say this, when it happens, and I hope it happens based on the choices you've made so far, but when it does, you're going to frickin' love it. Because it involves maybe one of your favorite characters.
It involves Gareth, doesn't it?
A little bit.
I do enjoy Gareth.
So, yeah, this
except
game.
Except when he has to do calibration.
This game is going to be so good.
I'm sure. It comes out, what, next week?
March 6th. Yeah.
Cool.
Now, here's the other thing I did. I played it on PC and Xbox.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to try out the Kinect stuff. So what I told myself I was going to do is I was going to use every possible Kinect command I could use through a playthrough of the demo. Using it to do the dialogue, weird. But there's potential in this idea. The reason it's weird is because you say something, and then Shepard basically repeats it, and it's like not like you said, it's like, hey, say this. It would be really interesting, I think, to play an RPG where it's the silent protagonist, but it's not because you're saying it, you know?
I guess.
It's more for the nerds to act in their games, I guess. But so you can also use it to, like, open doors. Or so instead of pushing the A button to open the door, you say open.
Why can't you just push the A button?
Now, it does kind of fall back. Remember I was talking about this with Halo Anniversary, where I could see this being a boon for handicapped gamers, maybe.
Yeah.
It's interesting there, but there's no fucking reason to ever say open to your Kinect.
Open the place.
Then you get to combat. If you're using an ability that you have to aim and shoot, like Shockwave or the Rush thing. I forget what it's called. Kinetic Barge or something.
My class doesn't have it. I don't know.
It's useless. There's so much of a delay between saying it and it happening, and then you have to still maintain your aim. It's not good.
How about for moving your squad mates?
That's where it works, where precision's not needed. Moving squad mates around, telling them to follow you. And then any ability that is like a passive thing, like switching ammo types or switching your gun or healing, there it works actually pretty well.
Yeah, but
the thing is, like,
it didn't work 100% of the time you did it, right?
I never had a problem with it not doing something. It always would do it. But it's just that system in Mass Effect works so well where you hit that trigger and everything just pauses so you can aim and pick everything. It's not like you needed this.
I think that bothers them that this game has to slow down, though. I think they don't want you to do that.
Right. And
it
I'm
doesn't
fine
bother me.
I like that pace in that game. I don't know if the Kinect commands work in the multiplayer, because the multiplayer, you can't pause.
Right.
Yeah. But you're still in a headset. Like, dude, shut up. Just push the button. So, yeah. That's kind of Mass Effect 3 demo in a nutshell. Believe me, when that game comes out, I'm going to talk for 45 minutes about it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I'm trying to think if I played anything else.
You've been gone all
lovely. For a few days.
Yeah, still. I play more Amalur. It's fun.
Yeah, I did that. And
I think you're good. George, what'd you play?
Yep.
I've been playing... I've actually been playing a lot of kind of smaller games lately.
This doesn't shock me.
I did actually pick up the... I picked up the Jack and Daxter HD collection for PS3.
Oh, cool.
And
how's that?
It's fucking glorious. Dude, it's Jack and Daxter. I fucking love Jack
I know.
And Daxter.
I love the third one. I like the first one. The second one was okay.
Yeah, I absolutely loved the first one because it was...
It was kind of the first 3D platformer that wasn't Mario that like kind of stood on its own.
Well, it was also, I mean, like, for me, anyway, it was one of the first games that I played that had a completely open world with no load times.
That's true. Which we kind of take for granted now.
Right. And that's the thing. But like, we take that for granted now, but I'm fairly certain it was the first game to do that on the PS2. It was the first game that I had seen do that on a console.
The only other game around that time I could think that did that was Soul Reaver. They were close.
Yeah, Soul Reaver had actually come out quite a while before, but Soul Reaver had load times. They were pretty short, but it would load from.
Yeah, I might be mixing this up in my head, but okay, we'll keep going.
I mean, like at the time when I was playing Jak and Daxter, the only other game I had played that didn't have any load times at all, where everything was streamed off the disc, was Dungeon Siege on the PC.
That was a good game, the first one.
I still think it's really good. But, like, Jak and Daxter made a huge impression on me, so I played the shit out of it, and I got the HD collection, and it's Jak and Daxter in HD, so I played that. The other thing is, I've got a side project that I'm on right now that I'm building it in Unity. I had been kind of resisting the idea of doing it in Unity because it's a great prototyping tool, but I never really considered it to be the kind of engine in which I'd want to. Right. I never felt like I would be able to build a finished product in Unity because Unity is very versatile, but it's also kind of slow. And so that bothered me a little bit, and I wasn't too sure about it. And just to see what kind of, you know, what's the sort of, like, top-shelf experience you can make with Unity, I downloaded and played Roshard on Steam. It's a little side-scrolling platformer with, some kind of physics puzzles and stuff. And to be completely honest, I was fucking flabbergasted by how good this game was. You know, because I had seen it. Actually, I was at GDC last year, and I saw like a demo build of Roshard on a PS3 at the Unity booth. I just kind of looked at it. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. Like Unity sort of tech demo, whatever. Played the finished game. It's on Steam and it's on PSN, and it's really fucking good. All made in Unity, and it looks way better than what you'd expect a Unity game to be. Like, it's way past, just sort of polished prototype. It's actually a finished game. Aside from that, I've just been... Oh, the other little thing I was playing was... a couple months ago, when Brandon Boyer, previously from, like... Boing Boing and Offworld, and he's been the chairman of the IGF for a really long time. He started out Venus Patrol, which is his site for indie games, and he put it up on Kickstarter to kind of help get the project started. And one of the rewards for contributing to the Kickstarter was a couple of exclusive games. Those games came out. What was it? Maybe a week and a half ago, or maybe 2 weeks. They're called Capsule and Gun Gods, and they're fucking
awesome.
Gun
Gods.
Like, Capsule is just this, it's this really cool, it's a flash game, but you're controlling a little space probe, but the only thing you have is just this little sort of CRT screen where you only get, like, the most abstract readout of where you are and what you're doing. Most of what happens through sound, and it's really cool. And Gun Gods is fucking amazing. It's like a Wolfenstein level, like, D-grade first-person shooter made in Game Maker where the music is rap in an alien language. It's fucking incredible.
Wow. That's cool.
It's so great. Oh my god. The game is so fucking goofy. It's made by Vlambeer, the same guys who made Super Crate Box. So you already know, like, what level of insanity to expect from it. It's
pastiche.
Pretty fucking rad. Mostly smaller games, because I really haven't had time to dive into these really, really huge experiences that take, you know, a few hours at a sitting.
So no Reckoning for you?
No. A couple of weeks ago, I did manage to get, like, five or six people at Microsoft to play Vanquish, because they hadn't played it before. And I was like, you have to play this, it's the best game ever, oh my god, it's Ikaruga on foot!
AJ doesn't like Vanquish.
I think it's okay. I played a good chunk of it.
But But yeah, I got a whole bunch of people playing it, and now everybody's like, fuck you, man, you got me playing this game, and I'm like, yes. More
I think I bought it over a year ago and still haven't played it yet. I'm like,
you haven't even played it, so
I haven't started yet. I'm just saying.
Dude, that game is goofy and amazing and incredible, and you have to be boosting all the time, and if you're behind cover for any longer than about 4 seconds, you're doing it wrong. That's the rule.
I know I like it. I've got to get to it. Hmm. All right. Anything else, George?
Nope. That's what I've been playing.
Cool beans. All right.
Let's see what you might be playing this week.
Well, the Vita's coming out.
Yay.
Woohoo.
But beside that, what's that?
Yeah.
You're biased. You work for their competitor.
probably because they're making a portable of their own.
Oh, wow.
Confirmed.
X-Boy, confirmed. You let it out, you're fired. So, Alan Wake's American Nightmare, coming out for Xbox Live Arcade. George, I assume you're slightly interested in this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll probably give it a shot.
Get it for free.
Yeah, yeah. the hilariously named Touch My Katamari for the Vita.
Clever.
I love that.
Is the series done yet?
I mean, how much longer can these people just roll things in a ball?
I don't know.
Syndicate. PC, PS3, 360.
Another game where the game comes out and the developers hit with layoffs. I hate that.
Ninja Gaiden Sigma Plus for Vita. So this is Ninja Gaiden 1.
Yeah. The hell?
Well, everyone liked 1 more than 2.
I guess so, yeah.
Here you go.
If 1 was better than 2.
Yeah. Ashura's Wrath for 360 and PS3. This is that weird game. I don't know.
I downloaded the demo. I haven't gotten to play it yet.
It's the Hindu mythology God of War.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
With more batshit insanity.
Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater 3D for 3DS. Hells yes. Shinobi 2, Revenge of Zen for Vita. Look out, guys.
I love the first one.
When Zen
got wronged.
Dynasty Warriors Next for Vita.
Again, this is another series. He's a dynifier.
These Vita games are all making me laugh. Here's the next one. Army Corps of Hell.
Oh, God.
Look out, guys.
Army Corps of Hell. It's funny, actually. I can't remember the name of the guy who made Army Corps of Hell. I think he's like the lead designer, the executive producer, or whatever. If you look at his industry profile on Giant Bomb, it's amazing because like the vast majority of his work history is basically like family-friendly titles with Nintendo and HAL Laboratories. So it's like a whole bunch of Kirby games and then Army Corps of Hell.
What is... It's a real-time strategy, apparently.
I guess.
Weird. All right. And then Fractured Soul Deep Void for the 3DS.
Wait. What's that name again?
Fractured Soul Deep Void. This sounds familiar.
Fractured
Why do
Soul
I know this?
Colon all Deep new... Void?
Yes. Yeah.
This is the most bullshit name for a video game I have ever heard in my
life.
Oh,
I've seen far worse.
There have been far worse on
Soul.
This show. Army Corps from Hell.
Yeah.
One of them.
This is even the worst one this week.
Well, at least Army Corps of Hell doesn't have a colon in it.
Yeah, it is weird for new IPs to have a colon. Yeah, even with Kingdoms of Amalur, Reckoning. We need the Reckoning.
They did that with Dragon Age 2, and always bothered me.
Yeah, Dragon Age Origins. It's called Dragon Age.
Origins, Genesis, Reckoning,
yeah.
Revengeance.
Yeah.
And we've got
fucking
there.
Video games.
Fucking video games, that's a good one.
Well, all right. Thanks for listening to the Exploding Barrel Podcast, everybody. Thanks, George, for joining us. It was
yes.
good times.
Thank you guys for having me. It's good
Great
to be back.
Stuff. Yeah. I'm sure you'll be back soon.
I hope so.
Unless you do something to piss me off.
Oh, no.
Just be, you don't want to piss him off. He hits you.
It's true. I hit AJ all the time. He knows. You can find more of us at ebpodcast.com.
Hey, you got it right.
Yeah, I usually do.
I know. Just you're on a streak there for a while.
Twitter.com/ExplodingBarrel and Facebook.com/ExplodingBarrel. And be sure to check us out in the iTunes Music Store and leave a review.
Thank you for the reviews that were left. They're all very nice.
Yes, yes. And that's the show. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week right here on the Exploding Barrel Podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Whee! Oh! I'm hilarious. I told you I'm the funny one. What a hilarious observation I made.